news for Vernon, Farmington, and the talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3.
Wow, what a time that we're living in. What a time we are living in. And you know, listen, there's a lot that we want to touch upon this morning. We talk about the feds that have kind of reclassified marijuana. We want to get into that this morning. And you know what? Christine does bring up a good point regarding the media bill. And I want to tomorrow we're going to have Vinny Candelora on, House Republican leader. And he was giving us updates on the language of that bill. We can talk about it this morning as well. But our first guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair is currently in New York, where he resides and works. And there's never a shortage of activity, whether it's refugees coming in from the southern border and they're being housed in tents outside of his front door, or you've got, to say they're a protester is putting it mildly, trouble starters. I could hear the police sirens in the background from here. Let's welcome back political investigative journalist George Colley. George, good morning.
Mr. Gary Byron, yeah, we got a little entrance music for me in the background here. The NYPD working hard, doing amazing work. But, you know, Gary, I was thinking about this. I've called in now for a couple years now, I think, every single Wednesday. Yes. And I've been howling at the moon about state and media partnerships and how the media and the government seem to be working together. I've been calling and complaining about Ned Lamont doing things that he should be getting caught and called out for. I've been calling and trying to warn about the impact of communists in our cities and on our campuses. It's all coming together in 1 week. It's all showing right now as to all the things that are going on. And I think that this is a time where I think really the light is being shined on these things. I think truth is being revealed. And, it may be ugly for the next few weeks, but I do think that this is, that in a lot of ways that the truth is being revealed nowadays as to what's been going on in some of our cities and some of our states with our government. And, who knows where this is going to shake out.
George, you and I have worked in media. You and I have gone to college, whatever, depending on the university or the college that you went to, is either a degree in communications or a degree in journalism or whatever. Okay. And we've taken journalistic law. We've taken, the history of journalism and what its original creation was to be, which was, we're going back to the 1600s here, 1700s. It was a watchdog. It was to make sure that we kept the elected officials on their toes and alert and making sure that they're aware that, we're watching over them so they can't run amok and not do the will of the people, not do what they were elected to do.
Yep.
But this, when you've got the watchdogs joining up with and kind of in bed with the politicians, well, then what's the purpose of the journalism? What's the purpose? Is it just as to be their spokesperson? Is it their another arm, if you will, of the government rather than being the watchdog? They're their communications vehicle. That's what it's looking like.
You're looking at this, and people will say this is money that this is. We're talking about this state media funding bill that Christine brought up, and it's something that I brought up, a month or two ago. And look, it's not the most egregious thing in the world. The state has advertising, and they're going to mandate that it has to go, a certain percentage of it has to go to local media. Now, the state's going to decide the winners and the losers, who's going to get it or not. I'm guessing in order for this bill to get passed, it needed to have lobbyists, which means it wasn't the G. Colleys, out there that were paying for this. It was the publicly traded companies. So basically, we're going to be funding these publicly, but we're going to be state mandating funding publicly traded companies. And the problem that you have with it is what are they getting in return? The biggest problem that I've had with the Connecticut political press pool has been that they, if they ask Ned Lamont the question, they will never ask it a second time. So if they ask the question, which is only, you know, a portion of the time, if they even ask it, a question that Ned Lamont doesn't want to ask. They didn't ask really about Semaphore. And when they did, he lied and they never followed up. They never, if they did ask about Digital Currency Group, he gives an answer about Annie running off to Nashville and they never bring it up again. The guy gave the most wacky answer in the history of the world about how complicated it is here in Connecticut and how his wife is moving to Nashville to invest there. Mm. And the media never pressed him on it. Yeah. You know, when you think about the test kits that they made up in that time, you know, it basically people were taking time off their vacation to hand out, you know, COVID test kits. You know, and they were on planes, trains, and automobiles, and they made it all up. They hadn't even ordered them. Like, I mean, there are so many things with this Ned Lamont administration, Saudi Annie, I mean, that, you know, the Bridgeport election, you know, that they're never even asked. But this week, he was asked the question, and then he was asked the follow-up. And guess what happened? He got caught lying. Lumberjack Ned, Treegate, Chainsaw Massacre, whatever hashtag you want to find for Ned Lamont cutting down 186 trees illegally without a permit in protected wetlands, including his neighbor's trees. Finally, after a week, the media did ask him questions about it.
Well, it was on the front page of the Hartford Current on Sunday. It made the Sunday front page.
Made the Sunday Current, and I got to give credit to Hearst. They're the ones who broke this story and have been pushing it. I don't know if the TV has picked it up yet. You know, they picked up an AP article, but they haven't done the reporting themselves. But Ned Lamont was asked about, you know, who ordered these trees to be cut. His initial answer to the media was the association, his neighborhood association. Now, typically, that would be the answer that they would leave out there. Asked and answered, nothing to ask again. But this Hearst reporter did what others haven't done, which is ask the simple follow-up. Let me confirm, you're saying it's the association that hired this contractor? Of course, Ned Lamont bumbled and stumbled and goes, well, me and the association. Now, I think we're going to find out it was Ned who hired, if they happen to ask it a third time. But at least they finally had a little crack in the armor here. Maybe from now on, the media won't take what he says as official word and will actually be skeptical, because the guy has lied his way with a smile through 5 or 6 years now as governor. He's never been challenged. All right, they talk about him being the most popular governor in the country as a Democrat. There hasn't been a negative article about the man in 6 years. You know, and so,
well, when you don't report it, when you're only giving one side of the story, of course he's going to be the most popular.
The question, exactly. I mean, and you know what, Ned Lamont, he's a good guy. Fine. You can still ask a good guy tough questions. You know, we live in a serious world. He's a serious guy with a serious job. Serious questions should be asked. We don't need to write, you know, every 3 or 4 months about how he's Ned Lasso, you know, or whatever gimmicky thing they're coming up with.
You know, on fire today.
I think that
Ned Lasso
is really a step up this week for the Connecticut media, maybe, to get back on track. But, of course, what happens as soon as those questions are asked? The Connecticut State Legislature votes on a bill to fund the media to pay for the advertising. It is, and they're celebrating it. They are so proud of the first in the nation bill. Well, guess what? There's a reason this is the first in the nation. That's not the way that journalism works. It's not ethical for journalists to be accepting money from the state. All right, you're supposed to be holding them accountable. You're not supposed to be getting funded by them. And for what it's worth, it's not only happening in Connecticut. All right, in New York City, they passed an even more egregious state media funding. They're paying 50% tax credits for every employee now of journalists in for media companies in New York City. So they're actually funding the reporters in the state media here in New York. And I'm guessing that if we looked in California and Illinois and a few other states, there's probably stuff like this going out there. State funding the media is nothing to celebrate. It is scary. It is the last thing that any journalist should be open to. And so I still want to see, you know, there have been a few that have spoken out against it. I know that Connor from Inside Investigator said that they would never accept that money. That's a group probably that's a small enough local news organization that would be eligible for this. They said that they're not going to go for it. you know, I would like to find out which media is pushing for this.
Yeah, well, you and I were just, I'm just thinking that. You and I are thinking alike here. I want to know which media outlets are accepting it, yes.
And how do they, now, I could really use it.
So would you accept it, George? I'm going to ask you the tough question. Are you going to accept it?
Oh, never. Are you kidding me? Like, I mean, I'll work at McDonald's before I accept that.
Look at this
and
guy. That's
there's nothing
integrity.
Wrong working at McDonald's, but but I'll tell you.
Hey, right now, I would, $25 an hour. That's nothing to shake a stick at, you know?
More money than I'm making that. But it's a real problem. And the fact that the Connecticut legislature doesn't get it, the fact that they could sit there smiling underneath the board of votes about how celebrating this first in the media, how quote, journalism, you know, how this bill strengthens democracy. Let me tell some of these dopes who don't have a clue about journalism that are making laws in Connecticut. Never before in the history of the world has state-funded media strengthened the democracy of that state or of that country, ever, anywhere. It's not the way it works. And so, you know, let's see. Let's see who these high and mighty journalists in Connecticut. You know, we already know NPR is state-funded. We know what the deal is. We've read enough about that over the last few months as to where they are.
Yeah.
But, let's hear from this other Connecticut media. Who are the people who've been lobbying this? You know, who are going to be the winners and the losers? And are you celebrating this? Now, they've probably been – now, what nobody talks about is that this may be a first-in-the-nation bill to mandate advertising from the state to go to local media. But the media has been getting funded by the state. For the last 4 years, it was through COVID outreach money. The contract for $72 million that the great Tony D'Angelo has talked about, you know, on Cousin Lee Elsie's show for years, that's been getting paid out since March 2020. The contract ends May 31st, 2024. So They're basically just extending the funding that they've already been given the last 4 years during COVID.
All right.
Now, I have no problem with funding or advertising. But you need to disclose it.
Yes.
And none of these media companies actually disclose how much money they've taken from the state for quote-unquote COVID outreach. So let's start disclosing where the money you're getting is, where it's coming from, and then you can start, and then we'll celebrate along with you.
I'm right there with you. I did not want to interject. You are on fire this morning. I got to take a break. When we come back, I want to talk about the riots that you're seeing in New York, particularly at NYU, and what happened last night at Columbia. More with George Colley right after this.
Yankee Peddler and Pawn in East Hartford is Connecticut's premier pawn shop, paying you top dollar whether you are pawning or selling your items. It's also your first choice to find great deals on used items. Yankee Peddler and Pawn has everything from gold and silver jewelry to electronics, power tools, some musical instruments, and so much more. With nearly 200 five-star Google reviews, customer service is always their number one priority. Go see Joe at Yankee Peddler and Pawn at 7 Pitkin Street in East Hartford and tell them Gary sent you.
Everyone is looking to get rid of facial wrinkles through facial rejuvenation. Dolan Dental in Weathersfield is now offering BTL, a non-invasive muscle-building and facial rejuvenation treatment that works by delivering controlled thermal energy to the deeper layers of the skin. This helps to stimulate collagen production and tighten the skin. There's little to no downtime, and it gives a more natural and youthful appearance. It can also strengthen muscle and burn fat in key areas of the body. DolanDental.com or BodyByBTL.com for more information.
Number one for breaking news for Vernon, Canton, and Rocky Hill. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360, FM 103.3.
24 minutes after the hour of 7 o'clock, our guest from gcolley.com in the Connecticut Capitalist. You know what we should call that? The Connecticut Insider. George Colley. George, look,
Hearst already has that one.
Oh, is that right? Yeah. Well, that's right. That's right. Yes.
And I'm very different than what they're doing.
Connecticut investigates.
It's the protests.
Yes.
I forget what day, and I don't know if I had talked with you last week about it or not. I know that I did on Friday when I talked with Lee. But I did go down to NYU last week when they had the faculty getting arrested. And the protests afterwards. And here's something that I think people need to understand. One, it's not students. I mean, it is some students, but it is like
I was saying that earlier.
This is organized by the Democratic Socialists. Right? These are communist groups. And it's the same people that, and I've said this over and over, that show up at the climate change, they show up at the immigration, they show up at the trans, they show up at, you know, every crazy communist pushed thing or protest out there. All right, so that's the first thing. It's not just students. And second is, it's not pro-Palestine. All right, it's anti-cop. All right, they're chanting NYPD, KKK, IDF, you're all the same, right? It's anti-Semitic. Right, they're chanting from the river to the sea, Palestine will be free. Right, Antifada, which is eliminating
Jewish war. Yeah,
and its people.
Yeah.
All right, it's anti-American. They're chanting death to America.
Mm-hmm.
Right, I mean, this isn't pro-Palestine. So I think that the media needs to understand that when you say pro-Palestine, there was one guy, the professor from Columbia, who wasn't allowed to get into the campus.
Jewish professor.
He says, every time you call it pro-Palestine, you're disrespecting the Palestinian people. I mean, this is pro-Hamas. You know, they're a terror organization. And I didn't want to go too far to say this publicly, but I think now that I can. Everyone's talking and comparing this about 1968, the Vietnam War.
No.
But the other day when Columbia, when they took over that building and they smashed through the building, and you had people in all black dressed like ninjas climbing through the windows, and they were taking the janitorial staff and others in their hostage. This stopped looking like 1968 Vietnam protests to me and gave a really weird 1972 Munich feel.
Mm.
And the concern is, where could this go from now? You know, when they start taking hostages, what's next? And I just think that what the NYPD did yesterday, when they finally went out in force and cleared this out, this has to happen everywhere. And I think that finally some of the states who've been kowtowing to this finally got it, because within hours of what happened yesterday, early morning at Columbia with them taking over that building, all of a sudden they cleared out UConn, they cleared out Yale, they arrested them. They weren't raising the fist with these people anymore. They realized that this took a much more serious.
We were watching yesterday in the morning while we were on. The state police were clearing out UConn. All the tents looked the same. You know it's organized. And this very morning, prior to you joining us, I said the exact same thing. These are not all Columbia students. Matter of fact, I would say maybe only 25 to 30% are Columbia students. I think the overwhelming majority are just being brought there by George Soros, by some organization that's funding them with the tents and with food and transport. I think they're being funded. I think this is very well organized.
Well, Eric Adams showed it yesterday, and Laura Ingraham had it on her show. You know, there's like a paid professional protest consultant that is on scene, this 63-year-old woman who like is organizing it and telling kids what to do. And it just so happens that she was also involved in Occupy Wall Street. She's also been involved in climate change. She's also been involved in BLM.
Mm.
So, you know, this has become Occupy Wall Street, which when it was Occupy New Haven, that ended because they were living in deplorable living conditions. There was rampant drug use and there were sexual assaults going on in the Greens. And so the idea is it's the same exact people doing the same exact thing. And it's, and I just think that, you know, and Adams has been calling that out here locally, and it's happening everywhere. But on your show last August, Gary, and last September, and I have it up on the Connecticut Capitalist Archive, I talked about and railed about the Socialist Revolution Group that was on campus in Connecticut colleges, especially at Yale, during orientation of these campuses. And it is a far-left radical socialist group that wants to bring the end of America. And are we surprised that by graduation day, this is what we're seeing? I mean, they are on the campus. They are loud and proud on the campus. They are recruiting people on the campus. There's pamphlets and pictures and all these things that I was putting out there on social media and on the Connecticut
George,
Capitol.
We got to wrap up.
And this is where we are now.
How close are you right now to Columbia University?
I'm 100 blocks away, but I have gone up there a couple times.
Okay.
I can't get onto the campus, so I haven't done as much.
Well, that's
there.
Good. Okay. George, keep up the great work. Call in if there's anything that's breaking that you think we need to be aware of that you maybe are privy to.
Absolutely. I will.
Thanks, Gary. Brother, have a great week. We'll talk next to Hump Day. Coming right back to Open Phones, we have one line open.
radio show that makes you think.
The Talk, AM 1360 and 103.3 Hartford, and AM 610 and FM 104.5 Litchfield. WDRC, celebrating 100 years.
Not only a winning lineup for the Talk of Connecticut, but a winning lineup for Full Power Radio, because, you know, should you leave our airwaves on any of the frequencies that we occupy, as you're heading down Route 9 or Route 2, heading towards the I-95 corridor, I'll tell you this, you can easily pick up our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company Interview Chair on our sister station, 94.9 News Now. Love it. Let's welcome back to the show Lee Elsie.
Hold on, I'm doing an official intro.
Pardon me.
All right, now we can go. Gary, are you there?
That was the official intro.
Well, not for you. I already pre-introduced you guys. I did that a little while ago.
Oh, you did? Okay.
Yeah, then I had like an official opening to the 8 o'clock hour, and it almost timed out perfectly.
Were you playing a little Jefferson Airplane, I think?
Well, I had I have an opening to the 8 o'clock hour that's kind of a rotator. And, so I just missed like literally 4 seconds it would have been.
I love Jefferson Airplane, man. That Surrealistic Pillow album is outstanding.
Yeah, you're a big music guy because you're a big music back in the music days. You're spinning the discs. We talked about that a lot. But is that Jefferson Airplane's one of your go-to bands?
I'd put them in my top 20.
Really? Yeah. Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Joe, they're not in your top 20 because you went.
No, they're not.
He gave me one of these, Gary.
Did I do that? I think we both heard that. Of course, I got sprayed a little, too, with that as well. So you only heard it. I had to feel it.
Oh, man. Well, that's all right. Top 20. That's good. She was hot back in the day. Should I say that? Can I say that? I can't say that.
Why can't you say that? You're complimenting her. Oh, that's right. You can't give compliments anymore.
No,
right?
God, no.
That's right.
Yeah. You get in trouble.
Yeah. You can't even say, like, I don't know, nice shoes. Right,
I don't think in the workplace you can. I think it's forbidden.
So if somebody came in with a new hairdo, you can't say, "Oh wow, I love what you did with your hair." That's compliments are out the window.
I think it's dangerous. It's a shaky footing now, which is kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah, but I like why?
Well, feminists will say, "Well, why do you care how she looks, or why do you care?"
I don't.
You
know, I'm just making up an
trying
observation.
To be nice.
Just being nice. Yeah.
Gary's going to be getting a haircut. What am I going to do? Not notice it?
Right. Are you getting a haircut?
Yeah.
Are you going to get like a buzz cut?
I'm going to get it shaved off, man.
Are you really?
It's going to be.
Me
and Telly Savalas. You know, that's just. Remember, like the old days, it was like Yul Brynner and Telly Savalas, and now everybody's bald.
Right. Well,
you look at you, man.
I'm bald.
Yeah, but see, you look very handsome.
Oh, that's nice.
Bald.
I did it 20-something years ago. I actually have all my hair. If I let it grow, it's just, you know, I have it. I just made a decision one day.
Were you a swimmer?
Someone in my life was going through. I did the cancer thing. Someone was going through cancer, and I did it to a support, and I liked it. I kept it. So
Very noble.
Yeah. No, I didn't want to come off like that. I just did it, and I always wanted to, but this gave me a good excuse to do it, so I did it. Are you really thinking about it? You and Joe should do it. You'd be like the Aryan Nation up there. You guys could have a show.
Aryan Nation? Well, forget it then. What the hell is that? If we're going to do it, we're going to do it for charity.
Actually, that's a pretty good idea. You probably should. That'd be good.
Our hair is our trademark. Joe and I were just talking about that earlier.
Yeah, we were. Your hair, both your hairs are your trademark.
Well, he's got it back in a ponytail, and mine's just wild. I don't know.
Have that curly, and Joe, you kind of have like a hippie-ish kind of vibe to you, man.
Do I?
With your hair. The hair kind of with the ponytail.
Well, he's got the beard, too.
That is true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that in a bad way. Just it is, that's sort of like the.
Are you giving him a compliment? Is this harassment?
No, sexual harassment.
It feels a little weird that we're talking about my appearance.
Well, last week we talked about me not wearing pants, so this is sort of getting into that zone
again.
There's
a theme.
Yeah.
How about them Bears? How about them Bears? Hell of a game.
Yes,
hell
man game. Stuff. Trucks and guns.
Yes, trucks. Sunday.
No, but so you guys aren't really thinking. You're not really thinking about shaving your head, are you? You should do it. Give it a shot.
I'll do it if Gary does it for charity. I would.
I think that's all right. Who would be? I'd
be afraid it wouldn't grow back.
I actually was a little afraid of that. Oh man, it's funny.
So what are you up to, man? What's up today?
Well, you know what? I'm like you. Probably I'm infuriated by what I'm watching on college campuses. I'm sure you guys are talking
about something
that.
Going on college campuses?
Not learning.
Really?
Not education.
So I'll tell you what, we're talking about it as well. You know, on Wednesday we have George Colley. He's with you on Friday.
Yeah.
You know, and I was looking at this last night. I'm sure if you watched Hannity last night, there was no commercials. He ran commercial free, and it was live. There was just people over at down in Columbia at university, and I'm looking around. I'm like, I'll bet that's 25% student, 75% hired guns.
Right.
You know, Soros and whatnot. There's just some organization that's just. You know, let's send in the protests, you know, and listeners are even, they're picking up on it. Smart listeners, man. They really are.
Yeah.
But because it happens, so you know, stuff like this is happening so often that it's like, you know what? This is all by design here, folks. Someone's behind here. Someone's behind this. There's an organization and all the tents are the same. You know, I think if you see one protester at NYU one day, 3 days later, they're going to be at Columbia. Next week, they'll be at UCLA. Probably the same guy. Just follow take the camera and follow him around.
Yeah, I know what organization it is that's behind him. I've already figured it out.
What is that?
It's the Democrat Party.
Well, see, a listener said that it's Republican or Democrat. It's not either one of the parties.
No. This is all Democrat. I mean, everything they stand for, the Democrats stand for.
Yeah, I do. That is true.
And by the way, you know, some of my excellent listeners pointed out, I missed it the first go around. All these kids have brand new tents that look exactly the same.
Yeah, $500 tents.
I mean, that's pretty remarkable. But they all have the same gear, and they all have found now it's fashionable to wear what I don't know what it's called, whatever the headscarf is for males. I know it's. It's called what? It's a burqa for women or a hijab, right? I think that's accurate. I could be wrong.
Burqa
for women, though. I don't know if it's a burqa for men, but they're all wearing.
You know what we called them when I was a kid growing up?
Yeah,
babushkas.
Is that true?
Yeah, we called it was a babushka.
Did you wear a babushka often?
No.
I used to wear the ski mask. My mom would give me the ski mask.
I remember one time it was so cold. I was like 10 years old. It was so cold, but I went to like a Cumberland Farms with a ski mask on, and I did. And I don't even know what I ordered. And finally, the woman goes, "Here you go, little." You know, I was a kid. She knows a kid. She goes, "But next time, you might want to take off the ski mask."
That's funny. See how you remember certain things. You know what I was thinking about? I'll run this by you guys. I mentioned this a couple days ago. See what your take is on this. So we all think about like memories of our life, right? And we, whatever event you were at, you think about it through your own eyes, right? How it sort of impacted you and how you view it. Someone the other day just sort of hit me with something that made me think about how other people view the same thing. Like me and you share memories. We're at different events together, right? So we be at an event. I see it one way. You may see it slightly different. I never thought about it like that. Have you ever thought about it like that? Like how somebody else see something
completely opposite as
or maybe it doesn't even have to be opposite. It could be just a little bit different, or they had an experience that's a little bit different, or your friend tells a story of the two of you together. He may remember it or she may remember it a certain way, and you remember it a little bit differently, or I don't know. I just was fascinated by that one day. I was captivated for 24 hours.
Well, what can you mention what that specifically was in your case?
My father was telling me a story about when he met me as a three-year-old. So my mom and him went on a date, right? And I was like a little lunatic under the table, like running around. I would hide under the table as a kid. I don't know. Probably sort of a gateway into why I'm a lunatic now. But it's, you know, and he just remembers. He was telling me the story about how I was throwing the sugar all over the place and this, that, and the other. But, I mean, if I had memories of that, which I don't, but if I did, I would see things differently. Just maybe it clicked in my head that we all have shared experiences, but we sort of probably look at them completely different. I don't know how you see things, and you probably don't know how I see things. I just thought it was a fascinating.
But that's what makes the world go round, right?
Yeah.
You know.
No. I'm not trying to you know break the mold or have some kind of a glorious I don't know what's the word I'm looking for discovery of anything. Okay. I just thought it was interesting that
Well, I mean, a 3-year-old's perspective is a lot different from a grown adult's perspective. Listen, you know what it is. You were so sweet, you just wanted to throw sugar around.
I don't think so.
You're throwing the love around.
But you and Joe were having this conversation, and Joe may have a different, sees it differently than you see it, than I see it, than the listeners see it. I find that stuff interesting. Because I can't jump inside your head, and you can't jump inside my head.
Thank God for that.
And it also goes to the same idea. Like, think about this. I know what blue looks like to me. Does blue look the same to you?
So now you're going down a different road because I've got a friend of mine. He's more like an acquaintance. I've known him for years. But we're not chummy,
Yeah.
And he's so analytical. Where it's like the sky is, it's not a cloud in the sky. It's a blue sky today. Well, it's more of a cobalt, Gary, And I'm like, well, cobalt is blue. Well, but blue. Yeah, nope. It's not. It's more phthalo blue. When I'm like, okay,
Yeah, but we make this assumption that me and you looking at the same photo, like of a let's say a mountain.
Okay,
and I see the mountain and the blue sky, but I see blue in my head a certain way. How do I know you see it exactly the same way?
But see, that's what politics is. I remember being in the Human Services Committee one time, and we were trying to explain to somebody who was testifying on some bill, and I can't remember. This is a few years back, and I'm trying to remember what even the bill was, but that's irrelevant. There was a Republican that mentioned, yes, this is how we can achieve that goal, and the person that was giving the testimony was like, wow, okay, that would be great. Can we do that? And he says, well, of course, it's got to come to a vote. But I can, we can begin the process. And then a Democrat said, well, yeah, that's one way. I wouldn't quite do it that way. I could achieve the goal of, I can solve this problem that you're presenting to us this way. And I'm sitting there, and of course the person testifying is like, well, that's great, and we're kind of shaking our heads, and it's kind of like this. I leave Bloomfield, or I could say I left the Capitol that day, and I live in Newington. Now, I could take 91 South and get off at the Berlin Turnpike, I could do that. Or I could take 84 West and get off at Flatbush Avenue in Hartford, or I could just take Washington Street and drive through the streets of Hartford, and eventually I could get onto New Britain Avenue, and that could take me into the back roads of Newington. They're all going to take me to the same location.
Right.
Now, one might be more straight. It's more direct. It's from point A to point B. It's more straight. You'll get there faster. But I may not take that way because the traffic that way, it's actually going to have a reverse effect. It's actually going to get me there longer. Even though it's more direct, there's more traffic. If I go this way, yeah, I'll hit a little bit of traffic, but the exit that I have comes a lot sooner, and I'll be off the highway. And even though it's a little bit of a roundabout way, it's less traffic. So we can all come. In other words, we're all reaching the same conclusion, the same, in this case, destination. But we've got our own ideas on which path would be most beneficial, most economical. You get what I'm saying?
So I do. Yeah, I do.
And I use that as an analogy when people would be complaining to us in the legislature where, I want you guys to reach the same conclusion. It's like, well, we often don't.
Right.
But in some cases, we do reach the same conclusion. We just have a different pathway to get there.
Well, your description is much more nuts and bolts. I was more esoteric, I think, my sort of example. I'm thinking, what says in my brain that blue is the same blue as you see? You could see blue completely different than I see. That's all. That's where I was getting. But I understand your point. There's a lot of different avenues to get to the same result and get the same or, a similar result. So
exactly.
I get that. You talked to Cliff yet today?
Oh, no, not today or yesterday. He called like every day last week, though.
He's on hold right now.
He did call, I think. Did he call Monday? He didn't call yesterday. He hasn't called today so far. What about you?
He's on hold right now. I didn't know.
Oh, is that right? No, well, that's why he's not calling me, because you got him on hold.
I don't know if you wanted to talk to him together today, see what he's got to say.
Sure, put him on.
Let's see what he's got to say. All right. This is a once. This is a first.
Hey, well, I'll right. tell you what. Let me answer.
Hey, guys.
All right, go ahead.
Hey, Cliff.
Hey, listen, I want to respond to a subject matter I brought up the other day. And basically, you had a response, Lee.
Yeah.
And, you know, I want you to revisit that. My issue was that people, the indigenous people that occupy a land, mm-hmm. say initially, just through hundreds of years ago, if that group of people still exists, they should be in control and have the power on their land. And Lee, what you basically said was that it doesn't work that way.
It doesn't.
So if some other ethnic group came in and took that land, committed genocide, then they have the power, they control the land. And that's just how it goes. You remember saying that?
I do.
Okay. So, Gary, do you believe in that? Do you feel that that's okay?
No, just look at the Indians. Look at the Native Americans.
Exactly.
So what would you guys like to do to rectify that situation?
So what I'm saying is that even though they were the indigenous people and they owned this land, they should be in power, they should be in control, and the point I'm making is that these people are almost extinct.
So the Indians, you know? So the Native American Indians who are here first are the only ones who should have power right now. That's what we talked about the other day, right, Cliff?
You know what I'm saying? Exactly. They should okay. be in a better position than which they in.
Well, I mean, that's a different argument. It's a different argument. You want to have them in a better position? Okay, like we can have that. That certainly wasn't... It didn't work out well for them for the longest time. But I mean, I don't know, you know, the world has conquerors and then they're conquered and they're conquered. You can go all the way back to the beginning of time if you just want the original human beings.
However, Lee and Gary, today, if there's anybody that was a threat to America and American soil, so the whole idea is to fight and build your military so nobody can conquer that. So is that a different standard to me, or is that the same?
Go ahead, Gary.
Well, there were, by the way.
In other words, you had the power, right, to take over a land that's occupied and owned by an original people, but yet when America's here, then the whole focus is to maintain and keep this land and to protect it, even though they are not, or these individuals or group of people are not the original occupants of that land.
You know, wartime can create strange bedfellows or strange alliances, if you will. Prior to the Revolutionary War, Native Americans and Americans were on the same fight against the French. And then during the Revolutionary War, the people we were just fighting against with the Indians, the French, became our ally and helped to fund our cause against the British, you know, and then we in the Revolutionary War. And then there was another. So, I mean, it your friend one day is your foe the next. And you're in the opposite. Your foe one day is your friend the next.
Okay. With that being said, here's my last point. And thank you so much for taking my call. My last point. Would Americans be okay, right, with that same logic, if in the future, even under the Trump administration, that America is taken over by Russia?
Nobody's going to be for that. Nobody's for it. That's why we're going to fight for it. Yeah, I think that's a ludicrous assumption, don't you?
Absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the world has ebbs and flows. Unfortunately, in times, people get conquered, fortunately or unfortunately. And he mentioned Indians. You mentioned Indians. Prior to us getting here, the Indians were killing each other. There was savage wars between Indians for the longest time.
And that was one of the issues when the Mohegans and the Pequots,
exactly,
right here in Connecticut. We've got the two casinos down in your neck of the woods. Well,
sure.
If you remember when in the 90s, when both those casinos came to be, that was a major contentious topic of discussion.
Right.
Because, you know, everybody's getting along now and years have gone by, of course, but.
Right.
Back in the day, to your point, Lee, they hated each other.
That's
there
exactly
was no
right.
love lost between them.
That's exactly right. You're 100% right. I think Cliff is just, you know, he's hung up on the idea. I don't know if he says the same thing, but this is maybe something other people are thinking about, how there is this confusion about who was in Israel first, right? So who has the right to the land? Well, I hate to say this, and I hate to be this blunt. The people who have the right to the land are the people who carry the biggest stick right now. I know that people don't like to hear that, and in a lot of cases it's sort of outside sort of this this kumbaya norm, but this is the, where we live nowadays. And Israel, though, has been, I think, amazingly cordial to their neighbors when they're constantly under attack, if that makes sense.
That's a very well politically correct way to state that, by the way.
What do you got the rest of the show?
Oh, Liz Karantowicz will join us in the 9 o'clock hour.
Yeah. Fabulous, fabulous.
You get her on, don't you?
Yeah, we have her on Tuesday, so.
Okay.
Yeah. Tell her we said hi, will you?
I will do that.
Yeah. All right, brother. You guys have a great show.
Always
man.
Great chatting with you.
You too, man.
Chat next Wednesday, brother.
All right, kid. Gary Barron.
So we've got open phones next. I see a couple of lines taken, a couple of lines that are open. You know who's not on there? You. Why don't you call in right now? 860-243-1360.
60 and FM 103.1.
We have been dedicating a lot of time, nearly the entire show, not just today or yesterday, but it really this entire week, talking predominantly about the anti-Semitism that is just rampant across these college campuses across the United States, including right here in Connecticut, stores yesterday in campus in UConn, and stores where the state police showed up and just basically threw everything in what looked like a big dump truck as I was watching the video. And it went along pretty swiftly. Harvard up in Boston or outside of Boston. Yale down in New Haven. Very contentious. We talk about New York University, USC in California. There's some things going on in Berkeley, University of Austin in Texas. And, of course, New York University. And last night, when, the more or less police had to, kind of break into the campus at Columbia University. It was, and let's face it, it was rather, and I'm watching this because student protesters had more or less barricaded themselves in, I think it's called Hamilton Hall. And police entered the hall, through the second floor window. I was watching it live at about 9:30 last night. And what happened was Columbia had ordered students to shelter in place. And then contacted the New York Police Department for assistance. We've been spending a lot of time on that. And I just figured, we should also talk a little bit about 1 week from today being the end of the 2024 legislative session as well. Good morning. It's Gary Byron, 9-11 here on this hump day. So glad to have you on board the old morning train. Our next guest into the Daily Connerton Memorial Company interview chair joins us the first Wednesday of every month. Love when she comes on. She is a campaign strategist, having worked on several campaigns here in the state of Connecticut. She's also a political analyst. You can catch her on News Channel 8 on Sunday mornings. They have a political show called Capitol Report. Let's welcome back to the show Liz Karantowicz. Liz, good morning.
Good morning, Gary. How are you?
Oh, hey, I am ducky. How are you this morning?
It's a day. It ends in a Y. We're here fighting the good fight.
Indeed. Indeed. And boy, I like how you chose your words, fight. Seems to be a lot of that going on lately.
Yeah, it's terrible, what we're seeing everywhere. I can't imagine being a Jewish mother and worrying about my kids going to school every day the violence and hateful speech and intimidation that they're experiencing. And it's sadly not only impacting, college campuses, but I've got friends who, have little ones in pre-K and they're concerned about their pre-Ks and their elementary schools being targeted. It's the most un-American thing possible, if you really think about it, because the freedom to practice your religion is the first freedom in the United States of America. And it is gleefully being trampled on by these petulant children. And it is an affront to everything that we hold sacred in this country. So,
what comes to mind, Liz, when you're watching the video of this or the live coverage of this? It's not even just, well, we are exercising our First Amendment rights of freedom of speech. Hey, I'm all for freedom of speech. I let people come on this show who aren't fond of me or fond of Republicans or conservative, for that matter.
Say no more.
I value the First Amendment more than anything else. That's the beauty of this country. But I don't look at this as free speech necessarily, or even hate speech. I don't even know what the hell hate speech is, but I look at this as terrorist speech. When you're talking about death to somebody, if somebody just calls up me and says, well, Gary, I don't like you, I don't like your show because I'm not a conservative and I can't stand Republicans. Hey, buddy, that's your right. That's why there's other stations that you could turn to. That's why there's other newspapers or magazines or TV stations you can turn to. That's your right. But what you don't have the right to do is chant death to anybody, really. Death to America, death to, you know, Jews, death to Israel, from the river to the sea. I mean, these are terrorist sentiments. These are terrorist statements and ultimately terrorist acts. I'm sorry, but there's no freedom of speech involved in that.
No, there isn't. And I think that there's a few issues at play here. It's just, and we see this, if you take it out of this situation that we're in, there's no accountability, right?
Sorry.
If you take out what they're talking about and you just look at this at its core, they're breaking the rules of their school. And there's punishment for that. There ought to be, right? I mean, if you went to college or you go to high school, you know, there are rules of that you have to follow in order to be a student. So at its core, these quote unquote students are not following the rules of their school, and the school is allowing it to happen, right? I mean, you look at Florida and Texas as two examples where public universities there clearly told these students they were violating the code of conduct and they were going to be held responsible. And they did it right at the beginning. And these schools that are not doing that and they're not enforcing their rules, we talk about this all the time. What's the point of having laws if you're not going to enforce them? And the same is true on college campuses. What's the point of having rules if you're not going to enforce them? Because if I'm a parent at that school, my kids get in trouble for breaking a residential life code or, you know, they did something that they shouldn't do, I'm going to look at the administration and say, well, you don't seem to be enforcing any of these other rules, so why are you enforcing them with my kid?
Mm-hmm.
It's a very slippery slope. And so even if you take it out of the conversation and away from the issues, which I agree with you wholeheartedly, this is terrorist sympathizing, this is terrorist organization, this is terrorist speech, and it needs to be treated that way. And again, these students, and I put that in air quotes, should be held accountable to the fullest extent of the law. But if you're going to have rules and you're not going to enforce them, what's the point? I have this conversation with my kids constantly.
Your school
has a code of conduct. If you break the rules, you're going to get in trouble. That's it.
Have you noticed?
These kids are not getting held accountable whatsoever.
Have you noticed, Liz, that any other president would make a statement, even if it's from the Oval Office or the White, they would just come out and say, you know, I condemn this action, you know, blah, blah, blah. They would say anything. I have not seen or heard one word about Biden denouncing this. And there's many theories behind that. He doesn't like the margin in Michigan with his during the primary. He thought it was just too close. He needs the vote, the Muslim vote in the state of Michigan. And you know that they're watching what's going on in New York and really throughout the nation when it comes to these I'm going to use air quotes here when I say protests. So he's purposely remaining silent because he likes to ride both sides. He likes to get the Jewish vote, sure. And he wants to get the Muslim vote. All right, so I can see right through this, and I think most people can as well. But a leader would at least make a statement, and they'd have a speechwriter to kind of cushion it just properly. But it's crickets from him. So my question to you, as a person who has a wealth of experience in running campaigns, I know it's more on the state level than on the federal level, but the theory is still the same. Would you not recommend a leader to come out and make statements, you know, denouncing this type of behavior?
Well, look, I don't think in our history there has been a more feckless leader than this president. I mean, Joe Biden cannot find a way to lead or be strong on anything. So I don't think we can look at this situation and go, oh man, he missed a moment. He's missed all the moments.
Well,
he's been the most passive, feckless president I think we've ever had.
Then how does that affect him in November? Because you just said, his numbers should be like, and I know that he's only got an approval rating of 28% to 32%, but his polling numbers against Trump in the presidential race are within the margin of error. It's only by about 4 to 6 points. Shouldn't, after all things that we were just been discussing, shouldn't it be lower? It will have an effect. But what kind of an effect will it have in November?
It will. I think that remains to be seen. You got to be careful in national polls too, because as a country, you know, we have swing states that essentially elect the president, right? I mean, that's kind of where it is. So those are the places where you need to be paying, you know, the most attention. But I think, look, a lot of people initially, I think the thought process was when they're making a decision about for whom they'll vote, they make decisions about how it impacts them in their life. And so foreign policy tends not to have that big of an impact because, again, it's foreign. It's outside of the country. And people are, when you look at like Maslow's law, hierarchy of needs, right? People are going to vote for what is most important to them in their lives. But this has become an issue front and center in the United States. You've got people taking down American flags and replacing them with Palestinian flags. You've got American Jewish students being harassed, intimidated, threatened. And so they have allowed this to become an issue, again, because of feckless leadership. And so, you know, I think that when you look at this from that perspective, no parent wants their kid to go to school and be targeted for any reason, certainly not because of their religion.
All right.
And you look back at the 60s, we had segregated campuses. And there, we had a movement to protect people's civil rights.
Liz,
and we're now looking the other way.
I've got to take a break here. And when we come back, you had brought up about taking down the American flag. I've got some sick information that I will share with you when we come back. More with Liz Karantowicz after this.
I'm Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. I learned about atrial fibrillation the hard way. My symptoms would come and go, shortness of breath, fatigue. I kept going. Then I got so lightheaded, I couldn't. My doctor said I have AFib, so I'm about 5 times more likely to have a stroke. Other symptoms, irregular heartbeat, heart racing, chest pain, can come and go, but the risk of stroke stays. If you have symptoms, tell a doctor. Visit notimetowait.com.
Sponsored by Bristol-Myers Squibb and Pfizer.
Now that spring has sprung, it's time to get your new grill or air conditioner. Ferrari's Appliance has all the name brands at the price you can afford. And they install and service everything they sell. Enough with the pushy salespeople and impersonal customer service. Head to Ferrari's Appliance in Newington or Naugatuck and discover why people from all over choose them over everyone else. Online at FerrarisAppliance.com.
Stay connected through the day. The Talk of Connecticut. Coming up, Mike Gallagher, 10 to noon. Dan Bongino from noon to 3. And Sebastian Borka on the drive home. The Talk of Connecticut. AM 1360 and FM 103.3, Hartford.
24 minutes after the hour of 9 o'clock, our guest is campaign strategist, political analyst, who joins us the first Wednesday of every month, Liz Karantowicz. Liz, before the break, I was telling you, you had brought this up, and you just stirred something in my mind because I was monitoring Fox News all yesterday and all of last night. Yale, Harvard, and Princeton, they've taken the American flag down and raised the Palestinian flag. So, look, there might be other universities that are that I'm omitting here, but this I'm getting this directly from Fox News. And Yale, New Haven's own, is on this this list. Yale, Harvard, and Princeton, American flags taken down at these universities and replaced by the Palestinian flags. We are becoming not only a banana republic, but a third world country, it appears, where we've lost all sense of law and order. Is this associated more with the Democrat Party, the Republican Party, no party, both parties, or is this not political at all, Liz?
Well, the one that I saw was at the City University of New York, where the New York Police Department went in, took the Palestinian flag down, and put the American flag back up.
There was an image
at University of North Carolina where a group of students protected the American flag in an attempt being made by these so-called protesters to remove the American flag. So I think that it's important to make note of those things because, to your point about political implications, I think that this is going to stir up an emotional response in people that will have an impact at the ballot box in November. And I think that you're seeing, frankly, the Democrat Party take a pass on this issue almost entirely. We have members of our own congressional delegation who voted against a resolution in Congress back in December that would have addressed anti-Semitism on American campuses. So I think that there's, again, the Working Families Party has been an aggressor in this situation, right? Calling for a ceasefire immediately without return of hostages or punishment for Hamas, consistently supporting these so-called protesters and that movement. And yet Connecticut Democrats, for example, blindly accept their cross endorsement in every election where it's possible. So the question becomes, will the Working Families Party continue to blindly cross-endorse Democrats? And is that why Connecticut Democrats have been silent? And will Connecticut Democrats openly seek that cross-endorsement given the strong anti-Semitic and anti-Israeli push that we're seeing by the Working Families Party, to say nothing of the other issues?
But does it even matter? If we don't have voter integrity, we got the likes of Wanda Jeter stuffing ballot boxes and whatever shenanigans that are going on nationally with presidential elections, with voter integrity coming into question. Does it even matter? Because according to 4 years ago, Biden is the most popular president ever in the history of presidents, with 81 million people casting their ballot for him. And
I think those numbers have taken a turn.
Not according to CNN and MSNBC. Yeah, his polling numbers may be down, but they still call him the most popular president and the most reformed president in history. And what he's doing for the American people will reap the rewards of, you know.
I don't think there are many people who see a reward over the last 3.5 years.
But I wouldn't be shocked if he won.
That's the interesting part, too. I think if you fail to recognize the reality of the people you want to lead and you turn a tin ear to what they're telling you, that becomes problematic. It'd be different if the president said, you know, I know you're frustrated. I know, you know, we're trying to get back on track. Here are the things that we're doing. Instead, you know, they're touting the benefits of Bidenomics. Raise your hand if you've benefited from Bidenomics. People can't buy houses.
But it doesn't matter, Liz. His name isn't Trump. That's all that matters to them.
To some people, that might be true. But I think given the when you look at the numbers and you listen to focus groups and you focus on what people are saying, I think that won't work anymore. And the polling and the data that I've seen, not just in Connecticut, but across the country, the electorate is responding to this election much more like they did in 2016. They don't really like either candidate. They don't really like either choice, but they certainly don't like what's happening. And they definitely don't are not responding to Joe Biden in the same way they supported Barack Obama or even Joe Biden in the 2020 election.
I think
so
Barack Obama's vision is now being manifested through Joe Biden as a conduit.
Agree with you.
We are done. Oh my goodness, Liz, that time just flew right by. I wanted to talk about end of session too.
Time flies when you're having fun, Gary Byron.
Thank you, Liz Karantowicz. We'll talk next time.
Sounds good. Talk
All right, soon. Girl. Coming right back to open phones. All our lines are open.
Crowley, May Day, literally. Police finally called to move on several violent campus pro-Palestinian protests.